Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a creative and political activist who hosts Beyond the Pale on WBAI in New York, a must listen these days, always a must listen, but especially of late, is a caucus member of Jews for Racial and Economic Justice, co-founder of its electoral arm, The Jewish Vote. Please welcome back to the show, Raphael Shimonov!
Hello. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you, man. Good
What's up, Raph? How you doing, man?
It's good, you know, considering gestures to the world. Doing okay. But trying to, it's so weird. It's like, I think a lot of people feel this, but like when the world is like this, you're supposed to sometimes lock it out and do your job. Mm-hmm. And it just seems really challenging to get into normal modes, like doing laundry while you should be in the streets in what feels like all the time right now. But
Yeah, you've been in these streets recently, arrested, and for your work, trying to get Chuck Schumer to help bring about a ceasefire.
Yeah, and to convince his niece to stop acting and stop comedy. Amy Schumer. That's the first
Amy Schumer's social media.
Those posts.
Oof.
Yeah, the watching the social media masks slip on comedians like, whoa.
All right. Well, we're going to get into all of that, plenty more. But first, we do like to get to know you a little bit better by asking you, what is something from your search history that's relevant about who you are?
I don't know. There's like the thing I always do, and it's probably always the last thing, is always I'm a bad speller. So it's every random word to just get the Google autocorrect and then use that. It's a really boring last search term, but it's what I need. That's my lifesaver over there.
What word are you getting hung up on?
One is always like, so now I developed a mnemonic device to remember this one. Principal versus principal pal. Oh, and I realized, like, you know, the principal of the school wants to be your pal.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's
but don't trust that motherfucker. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But you just picture the principal of the school turning his his baseball cap around backwards.
Hey, Raph,
I want to talk to you. Yeah, Raph, I want to talk to you about some of your Instagram posts, my man.
Come on into my office, my dude. There you go.
Oh my God,
now everyone's
exactly
going to know how to spell that from now on.
Yeah, that's like, yeah. I always get, like, same thing with a capital, like a capital versus a Capitol building.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the difference.
Well, I still see that one get through, like, in, like, established, like, I guess, at this quote-unquote outlets for journalism. And I'm like, you can't fuck that up now.
Yeah.
I certainly can. Can you tell me how you keep it straight? Because this principal shit is going to save my ass every time I
I don't know. I just, the OL is always the building, you know?
That's okay. The bell tolls.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, I guess Capitol.
The building's round, like an O. You could do that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. But I think I only remembered it because I only saw Capital written as a kid first. And then when that new one, hey, Capital.
Capital.
It's like Method Man.
Yeah. Like Cap-to-cal. Like, you misspelled it.
Cap-to-cal. How's it over here? So I used to get desert and dessert mixed up. And a girl I was dating, it's like, well, you always want more dessert, and dessert has two S's.
Wow.
Nobody wants more desert.
Yeah.
So one S.
Yeah. Well,
so there you go.
We just spun off a new podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Also, roll when something is rolling, two L's, you know, it's the L's get on a roll.
Yeah.
So. That's, you know, and this could be the whole show.
Matthew McConaughey, McCon August Hay. What do you do?
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
What are you doing to write Matthew McConaughey so often?
We were doing it. There was a run. There was like, when he was talking
when
about
he was
fucking
thinking about running for office.
Oh, yeah.
And we were fully in support of it. And so we had headlines such as, why not now? McConaughey, why not now?
Yeah.
McConaughey.
Yeah. McConaughey, how about this handsome fella?
Exactly.
I do like to watch his scene in Wolf of Wall Street on a somewhat regular basis. The vocal warm up right into him just fully embodying everybody I know who has ever worked on Wall Street.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Patron saint of Wall Street bros.
Yeah. What is something you think is overrated?
Because it's spooky movie season, I think Ari Aster as a filmmaker is a bit overrated.
Ooh, okay. He's the Midsommar?
Midsommar, Hereditary, and then the one that came out most recently, Beau is Afraid.
Afraid.
Didn't see that one. I think that he... Let me clarify. I think he... is good at making a horror movie that makes me feel very scared and unsettled. Because I saw both Midsommar and Hereditary in theaters, and they were effective horror movies in that I felt miserable and scared the whole time.
Yeah, it's not enough to just be scared. You want to feel worse, just like bad in general. Right. Like you've got a flu or something.
Right. Full body aches.
I have an emotional... I left Hereditary with like a migraine headache because I was just so tense and like just feeling
hell
so awful.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's a good storyteller. I think he's a good director and I think he gets good performances. And I think he's like good at is he overrated? I don't know. I just think I don't like his screenplays. Like, I think he's not a good storyteller. I think they're kind of sloppy. I think that he doesn't know how to write women really at all. Like, you know, his treatment of mental health and mental illness is really not good. Anyway.
It's really like, I think there's a lot of filmmakers like that now who are, they have all the power and the thing they choose to do with that power is to just like, be like, I'm going to do my own little stories. And they would be like so much better off just, you know, finding other people's stories to tell.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, send your draft to someone and get some notes.
Well, he doesn't need them because I saw that thing. Martin Scorsese is like, the pacing from Killers of the Flower Moon is like inspired by Midsommar. And he's like, Ari Aster is the fucking goat. And I'm like, I wonder what that means for this movie.
Marty. Oh, yeah. This guy's never going to not make his own screenplays after that one.
After this. Yeah. Yeah. You're goodbye to any chance.
But like Scorsese, Spielberg, Kubrick, like those people all made other people's screenplays. Like those.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you can still be a good filmmaker and not just write bad screenplays and make your
definitely.
Own bad screenplays.
Like the two or however many scripts that Steven Spielberg wrote are like not very good. He's a far better director than he is right. a screenwriter. So,
what are his? I actually didn't even know the.
Oh, let me look it up here. Right. Yeah. I used to know this, but
AI, I think.
Oh,
AI
maybe?
Was a collaboration with Kubrick, which. Also, yeah, like maybe.
Yeah, it's by Spielberg and then the story by Ian Watson. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right.
That's written and directed by Spielberg.
Oh, and he wrote The Fablemans, which tracks because it's like pretty autobiographical. But
makes sense.
I like didn't like that movie very much.
And then Goonies is Chris Columbus based on a story by Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
I will give him that one. I think
Poltergeist.
Pretty good.
But that's also three people writing with a story by Spielberg.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until very recently that Richard Donner made Goonies, like directed Goonies. I always thought it was Christopher Columbus because he wrote the screenplay. Mm-hmm. Richard Donner, like, really was responsible for my entire childhood with, like,
Lethal
Superman,
Weapon
Goonies, and Lethal Weapon, right. which I saw way too young. I was like, those are, like, my three favorite movies, dog.
my we, three like, favorite be best movies, friends? Dog.
Yeah, those hit pretty hard. What is what's something you think is underrated?
Apparently, we've been severely underrating the money-making potential of movies for adults.
Right.
The Scorsese film did very well last week, and now it had an incredibly high budget, but it performed very well. And obviously, this is coming off the summer when the Oppenheimer movie, a biopic of freaking Robert Oppenheimer, made nearly a billion dollars worldwide, made more than any of the recent Marvel movies has made. They have clearly created a void of demand for movies for grownups. And it's because once upon a time, the narrative was, well, it's just Tom Cruise, the last movie star. He's the only one keeping it aloft. It's like, no, not really. The last Mission Impossible movie did not do well.
Right.
But there clearly are adults who want to go out to the theater with their families and not watch the Mario Brothers movie. They want to see something for grownups that looks good on a big screen.
Some adults wanted God to see willing. The Mario Brothers movie, okay? Lay off the Mario Brothers yeah. movie.
Chris Pratt's awesome. A fucking genius, man. His voice
how
was
does he
fine.
Do those, how does he do those voices? He just disappears into every role.
Hey, it's me, Mario. Oh, my God, Chris. I've done it again, you shapeshifter.
Yeah, it's the Oppenheimer thing is worth, like, yeah, at the time it was part of this Boppenheimer phenomenon that, yeah, I feel like we rushed past the fact that a biopic of Robert Oppenheimer made almost $1 billion. That's doesn't really make sense and doesn't cohere to any form of Hollywood logic, you know?
Right.
It's just because it's Nolan and when you have a filmmaker, but like when Stanley Kubrick was making movies, like people weren't rushing out to see them like it was a blockbuster, you know? Like this feels like it's a new phenomenon that we haven't really seen. Like a director who anything he puts out is just like, that's gonna make $1 billion. And it can be like a dry ass, you know, look at and not that this was like a dry, boring movie, but it's pretty remarkable. And very adult of us, and I must compliment we the movie going public. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. And Raph, first of all, I listened to, I think it was the most recent episode of Beyond the Pale. It was the most recent episode that was on SoundCloud, where you were talking about your experience, you know, at, like we referenced earlier, you know, protesting at Schumer's house, getting arrested, that there was a story from the bus, the NYPD. Put you guys on the bus after, and there's a story about a Werther's original and about a wedding song.
Yeah,
that just like kind of warmed my heart and gave me something to warm my heart in a place that I wasn't expecting necessarily to have my heart warmed. Can you talk about those two stories?
Yeah. So we were in front of Chuck Schumer's house to push him to back the ceasefire legislation that's coming out, that already has come out since then, by Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib and others. And he's used to people in front of his house, and he also heard about it, so the police were ready. So what we had to do is block the streets in Grand Army Plaza, which is a big plaza that's like a major artery in Brooklyn, where he lives. And that's where we were arrested, I think over 53 of us or so.
Yeah.
And of course, we were put in these buses. NYPD likes to commandeer MTA buses when they have a mass arrest, and that's what they did here. And they were basically pulling us into the bus, blocking the traffic. And it's Brooklyn, so half the people we blocked the traffic for were like cheering us, right, and recording and putting it on social media. So we were going into the bus, and I realized I sit down cuffed in this bus, and everyone, because police here pretty much are obsessed with arresting people for jumping fares, not paying fares. And everyone just started singing a song, like just calling them out for all, like not only commandeering a bus for free, but all of them just walking it for free, which is, they actually, and there was this story where we were arrested with two elected officials in the state, and one of them was Zoran. And he, Zoran Mamdani, and he was with me and a friend and this woman, an older woman, amazing, adorable activist. Her name is, we call her Roz, but her name is Rosalind Pacheski. And she's a very like long time and very involved member of Jewish Voice for Peace, JVP, which was part of that coalition of left Jewish people and activists that were confronting. It was like 2,000 people came out to confront Schumer on this. And they bring her into the bus and she sits down, and you imagine like maybe a 5 foot tall, like sweet grandma, and she's walking in and sits down, her hands are behind her back. And what we realize is that she's not really cuffed. Like she's somehow avoiding getting cuffed, which is
pro move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put your hands behind your back immediately and they'll assume that you've been cuffed.
She's got zip ties on her. Yep.
I don't know the story of like why she was cuffed or why maybe someone felt bad for her and they didn't cuff her. I don't know. But the thing is, she's like has her hands behind her back and everyone thinks she's cuffed. And there's this, and Zoran's Muslim, and one of the few or only actually Muslim electeds in that state assembly. He's just like, you know, sitting there, we're all like in pain with these cuffs, and he just does the most Jewish motherly kind of amazing thing, which is you just see her hand, you see him and her kind of look and wait till the cops are looking the other way, and then her hand slips out from her back, goes into a bag, and takes out a candy, which I immediately realize is a Werther's original.
Yeah, it is.
And Zoran, without a word, turns around, opens his mouth, and she feeds him this candy and sneaks her hand back in behind her like she's cuffed. And it just was the most amazing thing. And for someone like me who often has a camera on him, it was really, so I'm reaching Molly Crabapple with this story. She's like, I think you all know about her. She's this amazing illustrator. And I want to have this illustrated because to me that it was this magical moment. And I know, and while I'm experiencing that moment, I mean, Werther's original, like, were there commercials like this? Like, didn't we grow up with Werther's original commercials like this? Not like in a bus getting arrested.
Right, where people are protesting.
It would have been way more lit if it was.
War crimes, and they're like, hey, you know what's going on.
But it was like typically like an older elder or someone.
Yeah, an elder showing love. Yeah, that is.
And none of us were ever excited by Werther's original.
Life. No. But like in that situation, hell yeah. Like the brand is strong.
I didn't even know it was still around, but I could use one right now. But yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, so that's like the story. That's like the ones. There's so many stories of Roz wherever you go with her. She's a powerful figure that brings a lot of history with her. She was like a CUNY professor and reproductive rights scholar back in the day when like no one was that. Yeah, she's incredible. And then there was this other, I think the other story you're referring to is while we're kind of like looking down and we were like shaking the bus. We were like giving the cops a really hard time. And during that moment, someone at Jews for Racial and Economic Justice, their new political director, he came on the bus. And I guess enough of us knew Alicia actually got married that day, earlier that day.
That day.
And that day, Alicia had her marriage.
Wow.
And decided that her honeymoon was going to be getting arrested with us.
Yeah.
And so people just started stomping and singing, and it's a bus full of Jews, so it was like the Jewish wedding song. It was on. Everyone's like stomping. Yeah. It was so beautiful.
That's so dope.
I even caught a cop like put his hand on his heart and just be like, aw. Like, I was like, wait, are you pretending?
Right. But he's like, do y'all need some chairs for the horror? Yeah. Like, what? Take these cuffs? Sorry.
It looked like he'd been to a Jewish wedding. And, you know, those are just like the two beautiful things that happen in this kind of movement space where people come out for real shit and still we find like joy and friendship and stuff in these things. And those long conversations we have in jail cells and sitting on a jail cell and seeing the carvings of like ACT UP etched on the thing, and one day 20 years from now someone else sitting there seeing the etchings of BLM on the chairs and just getting that energy from this long arc, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, that story and just generally the movement that you're involved in is such a beautiful testament to the Jewish faith that, like, I don't know, so many people at this time of terror are willing to like advocate for justice. And it reflects like a clarity and a humanism that is uncommon in the religions I grew up around, you know, like a Baptist in the South or like Catholicism or, you know,
I've always followed the Quakers for a while.
But I've always admired the Jewish faith and, you know, feel like this is a time when, people like the things that are getting talked about are this violent Zionism or anti-Semitism. It's like, no, like, what about these stories? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But you were also there for a story that came up on the show in D.C., the action on the Rotunda. And the question that we were asking on this show is, where the fuck was the FBI, man? Like, more evidence that the deep state has a massive left-wing bias.
Oh,
am I right?
I mean, there was, like Marjorie Taylor Greene said, this is an insurrection with that, with that same energy, which was really baffling to see when truly we're seeing people come together to advocate for peace. But
there's this Fox clip that I should send you, and it's them like wondering how we got in and how we did it. And then the Fox journalist actually, who was on the ground, was kind of like honest. And he was just like, oh, they got in by just going through the metal detector and saying that they're coming to practice free speech. And that's our free speech laws. Like they were trying to like make it into this big thing. Like people looked away.
And so did Antifa open the doors for them to enter?
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it was just like anyone can go into the Rotunda and meet their Congress member and talk. You know, you could literally talk to their staff. If you pass by AOCs, you see a bunch of post-its on the wall. Like she's like the rock star in Congress. So all these post-its like showing their adoration and support of AOC. And it's kind of cool.
But just like, so what's the difference between that and what happened on January 6th? Like, that's what I was like, just because you guys weren't ripping things off the wall and chanting that you wanted to hang the vice president, that's why you're allowed in?
The Rotunda is the pub. It's basically the public door for the public.
How'd you get this cheat code that you weren't supposed to rip things off the wall and threaten to kill the sitting vice president?
But it was that there was two actions in D.C. One was led by If Not Now, and that was sealing all the entrances and exits to the White House, which the Secret Service arrested people for. And then this event a couple of days later for Congress, and that was to really just take over the Rotunda. And what happened was there was 10,000 people outside supporting us, 500 went in, and together that was the largest Jewish action for Palestinians in history, anywhere in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you describe what If Not Now is, just for anybody who doesn't know?
Oh, so there's two groups really largely at play here. One is If Not Now. And If Not Now, so I'll start with JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, because it's older. It's like three decades old. And it started, of course, in solidarity with Palestinians. So it's very much like their orientation is like, go to the front line of who's being affected by the occupation and apartheid, and let them lead, and we be their Jewish allies, their comrades, you know, and that's a beautiful model. And then If Not Now took it another level, not in competition or anything, but like that identifying that there's also something in our culture and how we were raised that needs to be addressed, and that we need to unlearn the things that we were raised with throughout our lives. And so it's very much inward, and it's very much more youth-oriented, at least initially, and then also really specifically about ending American Jewish support for apartheid and occupation.
I've seen so many wild, like I've seen people call Jewish Voices for Peace like a terrorist group, like some really awful shit. Raph, since I've known you and like you've come on the show, like we've had a lot of conversations where your work in, you know, standing up and or being in solidarity with the people of Palestine has opened you up to all kinds of attacks, like that people would accuse you of being like self-hatred and things like that. I'm really curious, especially for you who's so involved in this and is looking at it through the perspective you are, like what that's been like to watch these things unfold the last few weeks and begin to see these rifts open up in really, really dramatic ways. And you know, like what that process is to sort of look on and say, like, so, like, some of us are here, others are completely there.
Yeah.
How do we make sense of it?
That's such a good question. And there's still so many open things that we're learning. Like right now, there is like you saw the statistics, there is a huge difference depending on your age and like where you fall on this issue, either as an American of any faith or no faith or as a Jew. But I think if not now, and JVP had like shift the paradigm and made it safer for a lot of people to be able to say, like, why am I being called anti-Semitic if these Jews are also believe what I believe? And then also we do that too. Like we say, why are we called self-hating Jews if Israel's largest human rights organization calls it apartheid? And there's a whole society called Breaking the Silence who are veterans in Israel who oppose the occupation. Many of them had even refused to serve and spent jail time refusing to serve. And it continues today. And these are like teenagers, like early 20-year-olds. So there's all this kind of layers upon layers of people seeking safety through validation. And it's kind of sad because what results for Palestinians is that I think you've probably seen all these super clips online, and that is when Palestinians are brought on to news shows, they're not asked about if their family's okay,
yeah,
who they lost, what they fear. They're asked if they support terrorism.
Do you condemn Hamas?
Yeah, exactly. And it's really, and then some of the Palestinian guests and experts and journalists would say, oh, by the way, my uncle died and my niece is missing and XYZ. Thanks for asking. You know what I mean? And they would just go, they would just pivot back to Hamas, 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 which is really, it's really, I can't imagine what that feels like to have to be, to not only have to disavow things. Like I posted a meme the other day, it was an asteroid that was coming to Earth to destroy it. And I wrote, yeah, but do Palestinians support it? You know, like it's just like becoming this thing where just gross. And also when they do speak about anything with Israel and Palestine, a Palestinian has to be like a PhD in European anti-Semitism in order not to say something that's triggering and this. And I understand those triggers, but also there's almost zero grace for Palestinians to just even mourn or speak for their own security.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got this article in the LA Times over the weekend about how the left has really let us down. I mean, we've gotten this article over and over again.
It's like, it's millennials are killing X industry. The left is really there. This week, it's this thing.
And like, they're going to be able to find anti-Semitism on the left because there's anti-Semitism everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, anti-Semitism is a huge problem. But in this context, as you're there, involved in this struggle for peace, it seems like you've seen something quite different from like anti-Semitism being on the ground for these protests and these actions.
Yeah. We like to say peace and justice, right? Like peace.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of people, a lot of people define peace, and I think peace is the right word, but a lot of people have redefined peace to mean quiet. And like, you know, there's no rally, as I can tell, for Black Lives Matter right now on the street that's very large right now. But that doesn't mean there's peace, right? There's still, those things are still happening every day. So I guess I like to remind folks to also say justice part, because peace in Gaza is 4 hours of electricity a day, calorie counting by Israel to not allow too much food in, water limitations, a blockade around every wall, no travel restrictions. It's just open air prison. And a lot of people define the day before that horrendous attack by Hamas on civilians, a lot of people define that as that day before that as peace. And anti-Semitism. Yeah. Another thing is like, it's very easy to kind of assume anti-Semitism is like in the water, in the air. And it's really, it's something that's manufactured by the right. And it was created by the right in Europe in order to remove, to create like a middle manager, like to create. So at the core of racism is this like supremacy, ethnic supremacy. And for example, the idea that someone exists like Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela, or something exists like Black culture defining global culture for decades and decades, all of these amazing accomplishments, all the inventions, all the things, all the scientific breakthroughs that any Black person does negates the idea of white supremacy. So a useful tool to undo that is the idea of this mystical Jewish person. This Jewish person, be it Soros or whoever, is behind the success of Black people. It's right. Behind the migrant, you know, like the idea that America is this a beacon for immigration and all these things. And so it's a really useful tool to A, redirect like financial pain and suffering from capitalism to a group of people, and also to protect the idea of the myth of white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I guess like what I'm seeing on the streets, to your question, finally, what I'm seeing on the streets, I do see occasionally anti-Semitic thing. I will see it. And then sometimes, most of the time, I'll call the person in and be like, hey, like they'll be like, the Jewish state. This is like what the Jewish state does. And then I'll be like, well, do you mean the Israeli state?
Yeah, right.
Or do you mean the Jewish state? And then they're like, oh, I didn't think about that. But had they said that in front of a New York Post reporter, that would be on the front page and would be used to define DSA, would be used to define anything and try to destroy the left. And what I saw in Israel, there is an Arab town, I forget the name right now, there's an Arab town that after the attacks welcomed Jewish refugees. And the history of that Arab town was it was the site of the most horrific massacre by Jews of Palestinians, of Arabs in that town. And they still are opening their doors to the families affected by that attack by Hamas. You know, you're seeing these things on the street and you're basically going to find what you're looking for.
Right.
And the question is, what are you amplifying and what are you using to define an entire thing with?
Yeah, because I've seen how useful that sort of the left is anti-Semitic, like that, how that take has been used by like establishment Democrats and shit to completely try and take the wind out of the sails or question the validity of people pointing out that the ills of Palestinian people living under occupation, and then just being able to sort of use this like thought killing cliche to be like, well, they're all anti-Semitic. So let's now back to our person on the ground from the IDF that is going to tell us exactly what's happening now.
Right.
And yeah, like I see how, like, in a way, like for establishment politics too, like this has been used to be like, oh, we can also sort of kneecap a movement as well by bringing it into this, you know, a very skewed perspective that they want to show. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also what I saw the difference in our protests, the Jewish ones, the police were like there and they threw a lot of people around and did this stuff. But when I went to the Palestinian youth protest in front of the Israeli embassy in DC on that Friday night, it was riot gear. It was cars parked in ways. There was also this guy, infamous cop, I forget his name, but he's known to have killed a BLM protester, and he's just walking around. Like it was so different, and these were to kids.
Right.
And it was wild that these kids in this little residential neighborhood that of this very secure Israeli embassy were met with riot cops versus us in the heart of the power of the United States, in the most sensitive part of the world. And we were just, you know, singing into a bus, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll keep talking about this. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zai Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring the Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back, and we're just going to get right down to it. Five Nights at Freddy's, video game movie that was not aware of that. I had a sense based on the poster it was something. It was a movie based on something, based on video game, and it's like spooky Chuck E.
Cheese. Which is, I'm bummed that the movie sucks because Chuck could really use the good PR right now.
Yeah.
Did either of you play it? I never played it, but I remember that was the first video game I ever saw, like, play through YouTube videos for.
Okay. I never played it, but when we were both working at Playboy, Jamie, when I was doing video there, there was like a video series with two playmates that are gamers. And I remember I had to like produce a shoot with that. And I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, oh, this game is fucking freaky. But I'm not into horror as a genre, but I have seen it played. And like at the time, this was like the biggest shit. Like I think it came out in 2014.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a, you know, huge, huge like indie game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I didn't even realize it was an indie game because of how like. Yeah, that was the first time I had ever like encountered that as a thing that happened and thought it was isolated. And then, you know, obviously I've never stopped seeing it. But it's, I mean, haunted animatronics, a great idea.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The guy who invented the Chuck E. Cheese animatronics, very racist. Like, don't fuck with this guy. However, at least as recently as a couple of years ago, still had this warehouse in Florida where the animatronics were once made and was really trying to capitalize on the success of Five Nights at Freddy's. And because he basically lived in a, you know, like haunted animatronics palace. So he started like selling the like Five Nights at Freddy's birthday party experience with his like scary old animatronics. Oh. And it seemed to be somewhat successful.
Yeah, that makes sense. Some point. I mean, like the diehard fans, like they fuck. I mean, there's a reason why it became a Blumhouse film. It's because they definitely said there's an audience. There's an absolute audience for it.
So producer Victor is noting that there are multiple 3-hour lore documentaries about Five Nights at Freddy's.
Five Nights at Freddy's?
Five Nights at Freddy's.
what could that possibly mean? That's that's so interesting.
Well, that's like a big thing that like as the reviews come in, like there's a whole debate where some people are like, it's not really for casuals, man. Like if you don't fuck like, or some people are like, there's not enough lore. Yeah. It is wild. Like I'm like, it's interesting following the reaction because like anything when you have a huge, like when a fandom gets to that point where now like a Blumhouse or major studios are like, yeah, let's see if we can make money off of this. It's always interesting to see how, like, inevitably the fans will be disappointed. I think it's just generally what's always going to happen. Like, there's only a few instances where you have something with, like, a huge mega following, take that next jump to, like, major film distribution and it be, you know, palatable.
I was kind of, I was positive, because I didn't see, I kind of forgot it was coming out until they showed the trailer at Saw X. And I was like, damn, they got Hutcherson. And my friend was like, I don't think that's hard to do. And
I was like, wait, what did you just say?
Damn.
They got
Josh Hutcherson's like, what? Like in the seat in front of you?
Sorry, in 2012.
Yeah. You need something?
I did see Josh Hutcherson getting into a very quiet argument with his girlfriend in front of a restaurant near my house once. So it is like not that hard to get Hutcherson. but I was like, I don't know. Maybe I just like went 2012 brain for a second where like, I'm like, damn, they got Hutcherson. Five Night Freddy is huge.
Yeah. It's bigger than Hunger Games.
Yeah.
There's something about the minds of people who are like scared of animatronics, I guess, or like into, I don't know, because the writer of the original indie game, also like a right-wing person.
God, what is it with animatronics and being a piece of shit?
I think because they're like techno slaves or some shit, probably. Mm. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I make them do what I say. And I can make you in my image. Like, I don't know. It's probably some weird God complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. On some level.
But hey, I would love to see where are the woke animatronic studios at?
Right.
I mean, there's certainly woke animatronic fans, but I
right.
But we're not technically minded, unfortunately.
Right. You're just there for the commentary.
Mm-hmm. We are topping out for Five Nights at Freddy's. We are topping out on Metacritic. So the overall Metacritic score is 29, an average of 29, and we're topping out. Usually you will get like one or two that's like, hey, I actually enjoyed this because I was like, my meds are dialed in or something, you know, like, so like I sometimes I just enjoy the hell out of them. Like one of my favorite film going experiences was Die Hard 4 for no reason other than I was just in a good mood that day.
Good place in your life.
Yeah, good place in my life. Loved that movie the first time I saw it. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh, this is bad.
right.
But like this is we're topping out at 2 out of 5 stars. Most of them are lower than that, the average. And this, like, not all reviews are in, but it seems pretty dismal. And everyone's saying it's boring, it's not
boring.
Yeah. I mean, even like the fans, like there's a guy who would like stream it on YouTube, like this guy, Jacksepticeye guy, like his review is like, it is not great. Sort of like the nice version. And a lot of people are like, you made a lot of Five Nights at Freddy content. But again, I think that's where like you see a lot of, you know, other fans come in and be like, it's just it, people aren't going to understand it. It's not for normies. But then this guy who like plays the game a ton is like, just felt rushed in some spots, other parts. It just was very normal, like did not feel like as, you know, original as like the game, the original idea is itself. So
you see the trailer, you're like, oh, they got Hutcherson, but
they got Hutcherson.
But they like now I'm kind of embarrassed because Hutcherson knows like what I'm into and like they did such a bad job with the lore that now like I'm like they shouldn't have done this to Hutcherson or us
or Matthew Lillard, you know?
Matthew, they got Lillard. That was another thing. I mean,
Mary Stuart Masterson, you know,
kind of a star-studded cast. I was really impressed with the cast. I love that they got Lillard. I feel like Lillard played the game. That's my guess, is that Lillard was into it. Hutcherson, I don't know of his hobbies. I don't know. Nah.
His agents were like, hey, man, you're going to have to say yes to this.
We got bad news.
You have to be the lead in Five Night Freddy.
You're Five Night Freddy.
You're Freddy.
You're Knife Freddy because nobody was fucking with Journey to the Center of the Earth 2.
Oh, God, he was in that. Yeah. It's a bummer that we would eat at the same ramen place. It's like when I saw Taylor Lautner at a bar I go to, and you're just like, this sucks.
Recently?
It's like 5 years ago. So I think that.
But I mean, like post, like super high Twilight peak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like a place where you get like, you know, $3 backwash. I'm like, why the hell is Taylor Lautner here drinking $3 backwash with the plebs?
Was he doing that thing where he had his back to the bar looking out at the bar?
He was holding court. He was holding court. It was really cool. Like he bought rounds. He was holding court. He had no issue with you knowing he was drinking backwash at the bar, which is cool. That's a cool quality. He was with, I think, his girlfriend, now his wife, also named Taylor. That's not very cool, I don't think.
Wait, he married a Taylor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they're the Taylor's Lautner.
They're both Taylor Lautner.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Should we talk about the Britney Spears memoir?
Oh.
The audiobook? Have you guys
Michelle
listened?
Michelle Williams?
Yeah.
I have.
Slowly, I've just slowly seen some like excerpts get sort of elevated to the top. But obviously, I think the big one with the release of the audiobook was everyone sharing the clip of Michelle Williams doing an impression of Justin Timberlake doing a black scent.
Yeah. It's
what?
It's a lot.
Have you not heard it?
No.
Jamie, for someone who is so online, I'm like, Jamie, this is old hat for Jamie. I'm sure. Okay. So
I was like, let's see how long because I was like, I want to read it. And I also was waiting for an episode of Chelsea Devantes's podcast about it. I was like, and then I'll engage.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Wait, so tell me. Just
one excerpt, you know, like this is one loose line that's like blowing up where she's, first of all, like Britney Spears is talking about why she was fucking with NSYNC over Backstreet Boys. She's like, NSYNC, like they listen to hip hop, like they seem more oriented towards that kind of culture where the Backstreet Boys felt very white. Mm. I'm just going to, we'll just play this clip really quick because
when they're
it's,
all white guys from Florida, I'm like, yeah, and like, what is that? Like,
and let's
by
not
the
forget,
same guy.
Let's not forget Chris with his techno dreads either.
Oh my God.
But hey. Let's focus on
Chip
Justin here.
Skylark himself. Brutal.
But yeah, this is one of the excerpts here. Just talking about this time where he met another famous R&B musician. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, like a lot of people are pointing out, like this seems, Michelle Williams is a 5-time Academy Award nominee. People are like, why is she doing this? And then they're listening and they're like, oh, she's the best that has ever done this before. She's killing it. She's doing a great job. So, yeah, this is a little sample of that. And it's an anecdote that it's caught a lot of people's attention. Mm.
His band NSYNC was what people back then called So Pimp. They were white boys, but they loved hip hop. No, to me, that's what separated them from the Backstreet Boys, who seemed very consciously to position themselves as a white group. NSYNC hung out with black artists. Sometimes I thought they tried too hard to fit in. One day, Jay and I were in New York, going to parts of town I'd never been to before. Walking our way was a guy with a huge, blinged-out medallion. He was flanked by two giant security guards. Jay got all excited and said so loud, "Oh yeah, fo shiz, genuine, what's up, homie?" After Genuine walked away, Felicia did an impression of Jay. "Oh yeah, fo shiz, genuine." Jay wasn't even embarrassed.
Wow.
I like there's like a yada yada pass that I'm sure they had an interaction, but it kind of suggests that Genuine just, he did that and Genuine just walked away.
Yeah.
Immediately. It was like, oh my God.
What the fuck is that?
The abrupt switch after the audiobook pause before Genuine walked away. Like, you're just like, oh my God.
After Genuine walked away.
She's a professional.
Yeah.
She's good.
A professional. That alarming. I'm looking forward to reading that book or probably more likely listening to it. Celebrity memoirs are meant to be listened to.
Especially oh yeah. Because I'm pretty sure what Britney Spears personally was like, I want Michelle Williams to narrate this. Like, this is why this is happening. So,
very weird. How do they know each other?
Dialed in so well, though. Like, what better person to lend your voice or to have their lend their voice than have Michelle Williams do the Britney Spears book?
So but good. Wow.
Maybe she'll get the EGOT.
Yeah,
maybe she will. This is her Grammy.
Yeah, yeah.
God, beautiful.
There's also the story that Britney Spears almost got. What was the famous role that she almost?
Oh, The Notebook.
The Notebook.
Yeah.
She almost was cast in The Notebook.
She was like in the final three.
Yeah, it was between... No, it was, she was in the final two. It was between her and Rachel McAdams. And like they... Like Scarlett Johansson and all these other people had tried out and they were like, Britney Spears is like fucking nailing this. She's
like, really?
Absolutely like an amazing actor.
Oh, wow. There's like her audition tape is available.
Yeah, yeah.
That's her audition tape's so cool.
I think they camera tested with Ryan too.
Yeah.
That's, I always want, I mean, I know that there were a number of extenuating circumstances in Britney's life that, but I was, her movie career was like a non-starter. And up until recently, you couldn't even get Crossroads. Like you couldn't even stream it until recently, even though that was like an early Shonda Rhimes script.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was like one, I think it was like Shonda Rhimes, one of Shonda Rhimes' like first produced scripts ever was the Britney Spears vehicle Crossroads. And she's so good in it and she's so charming and like she's a good actor. And it's like it worked out for Mandy Moore. Mandy Moore kind of dropped music and started This Is Us singer. I still don't know what that show is about, but damn, she would have been cool in The Notebook.
Yeah. Yeah, because what Shonda Rhimes also, didn't she do Princess Diaries 2? That was like another super early one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Shonda.
That was after Crossroads. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, pre-Crossroads. And if I'm recalling, I know too much of Shonda's filmography. I think it's just shy of, it's like the year before Grey's Anatomy.
Oof.
She did Princess Diaries 2, Royal Engagement. Yep, sure enough, it is true. It is true. But I'm like, what is Shonda's relationship with Britney? Is there one?
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know.
Right. What could have been, you know?
Truly.
Yeah. And if she was Meredith Grey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right.
But then it's like, we would have been, I mean, and again, this is like not even taking into account what happens later in Britney's career, but like we would have not gotten some really solid Britney albums if she had gone too far into acting. So
when she talks about it, she's like, I, you know, at a certain point, I decided to stop auditioning and just record, just drop classic albums on you all instead. Like
if we got Britney in The Notebook, we may not have gotten Blackout. And that would have been challenging
for
me as a youth. That would
for
have been,
American culture.
That would have been pretty hard.
You think America's bad right now? You think America's bad right now? Try and picture this counterfactual.
Yeah.
But yeah. And also she has a quote like in one of the articles I read about The Notebook thing that she was like, it was just mentally too difficult. Like I just embodied the character and like trying out for that character like got to me. So like she was almost like too method to like actually pursue acting because it was just like too painful for her.
God, I love that woman.
Which sounds like a great actor. Like, let's make it happen.
Yeah. It's funny too, like, cause Justin Timberlake does not come out looking good in this too. Like she talks about how like she became pregnant, like with his child and then, you know, had to have an abortion and things like that. And then like now it's funny to see the PR machine move in Justin's direction. And they're like, Justin Timberlake is fine. He's actually just focusing on being with his family, like amid the noise.
Amid the like, when it's also noise. Like pretty well documented that his family does not like him.
Right.
So cool. I'm sure they're really enjoying spending time with you on this, your 50th cancellation. I was trying to think of, you know, like because of SAG rules, I'm like, I have to think of like a Halloween costume I can wear. And I have a lot of, I can pretty close to replicate the Justin Timberlake denim outfit, and so I'm trying to put something together like recently disgraced denim boyfriend but it's getting the hat together because then I you know and then I was just gonna put, you know, tear streaks, some snot, shit like that. Recently disgraced denim boyfriend. That's a really free good. One for everybody.
That's so good.
You got to get those gradiated, like those gradient shades too.
Oh my God, yeah, like the yellow the freaky late 90s blue blockers everyone
was
wearing.
Yeah.
Yo, it's so wild, like that outfit. There's tutorials on how to make the disgraced denim boyfriend outfit. Like it's like
is
how
there?
To make your denim Britney and Justin outfit.
Good Lord.
What a time.
I mean,
what a time.
Great horrible man, great outfits. Brittany. Yeah. Ugh. Queen. God bless her. She's the best.
Keep on dancing with those knives, girl.
Or don't.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.